I'm Jordan Abel, Director of Public Programs at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco, and I welcome you to BINA, KALW's program featuring creative voices from the JCCSF. In this series, we bring you remarkable artists and thinkers who've come to speak at the JCCSF as part of our Arts and Ideas program. On this edition of BINA, our guest is Lizzie Post, great-great-granddaughter of Emily Post and co-president of the Emily Post Institute. Her new book is Higher Etiquette, A Guide to the World of Cannabis, From Dispensaries to Dinner Parties. She's joined in conversation by Tony Bravo, style reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. And now, join me on stage at the JCCSF as I introduce Lizzie Post and Tony Bravo. Hi, everyone. Welcome. Welcome to the JCCSF. I'm so glad you're all here for our wonderful event with Lizzie Post and Tony Bravo to celebrate Higher Etiquette. We are very excited to have Lizzie here. She is the great-great-granddaughter of Emily Post and co-president of the Emily Post Institute. She's written lots of books. She co-hosts a podcast and has written this wonderful book, which she's here to tell you all about. And she's joined in conversation by Tony Bravo, a Chronicle style writer who has had his grandmother's copy of the Emily Post Etiquette book on his bedside table. He brought in the Chronicle's copy from the library from the 40s, I think, which is here. So I'm so thrilled. No one better to interview Lizzie. So please join me to welcome Lizzie Post and Tony Bravo.
Hi.
Hi, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. And Lizzie, I'm so excited to finally be with you in person after our great phone calls and our fantastic interview a couple months ago.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here as well. I can fully say that it's not always often that I get to geek out with a reporter in such a way about Emily Post etiquette. And you, this is actually 1937.
This is a 1937 copy from the Chronicle, what used to be the Chronicle Reference Library. It sits on my desk at work in case anybody asks me where the finger bowl is supposed to go, which Lizzie tells me that they bring that out between courses. It doesn't sit on the table, right?
Right, exactly.
I mean, at a good party, it doesn't sit on the table.
Exactly.
I don't know what other people do. So this is so exciting to have you. So the first thing that I thought when your book passed my desk was immediately I saw Post Institute and thought, oh, thank God, manners are not dead.
No, we are alive and well and in Burlington, Vermont.
And then I saw... Amen to that. Burlington has a lot of beautiful things. And then I saw the subject matter of the book and I thought, wow, Emily Post is really going in a progressive, a different direction than maybe a lot of people think of the mistress of American manners as. It's a different territory for the Post family, perhaps. But then you said something fabulous to me. I asked you a question that is a chapter name in this book. There's a chapter in here called What Would Emily Post Think of This Book? So I think before we go any further, I have to ask that. You know, would your great-great-grandmother be scandalized by the fact that you wrote a book about the devil's reefer?
I do not think so. Emily Post was actually... she really fought hard against prohibition during her time. She and her father did not believe that the government should be able to infringe upon what they believed were citizens' rights. Now, I have absolutely no information on whether or not Emily ever consumed cannabis. It was very popular in tincture form while she was a young woman, so it absolutely could have been her headache reliever, tummy tamer, like who knows what. But she never wrote about it, so I don't have any proof. I will not claim that I know one way or the other. One thing I do know, and it comes from one of these books sitting here, is that Emily did not approve of smoking. She knew people did it. She thought of it as a dreadful habit. She hated how it impacted others. And so my guess is that great-great-grandmama would not be happy about my smoking joints. But I do think she would be happy about me taking them outside or being respectful of others when I do consume them.
I love what you said to me about how it was about choice, that she respected people's freedom in the 1920s when alcohol was prohibited to enjoy a glass of wine, to go to a speakeasy, and how the way you referred to cannabis in this book, I think, is very much informed by kind of that language. You talk about prohibition of cannabis and life post prohibition of cannabis.
Absolutely. It's interesting because in the world of cannabis, you know, when something's been secretive and when it's been prohibited for so long, there's a lot of shame and a lot of secrecy that's associated. And we're often thinking about how to best protect people because, you know, literally you could do them harm if you got them arrested. You could do them harm if you outed them in front of a relative or a coworker. And that's a really different world to live in than a world where it's okay. And it's okay that I do this, and it's okay that I tell you that I do this in my free time, and it's also none of your business whether I do this. And those are some of the interesting kind of concepts that the legalized cannabis world is dealing with. Is this is not like, I mean, it's a wonderful comparison in terms of social behavior that we're already used to, comparing cannabis to other adult topics like sex and smoking cigarettes and using guns and alcohol. It is a good comparison. But where it really fails with all of those other topics is that cannabis can be your medicine. And that your high is very different. You know, most people, when they get drunk, it's a similar drunk across the board. Some might be mean, some might be violent, some might be silly, some might forget things. But for the most part, there's a pretty consistent level there. With cannabis, it is completely different, and it can be completely different per strain or per day. And so it's a whole different ballgame.
So before we get into really the cannabis part of the conversation, I do want to spend just another minute talking about your illustrious ancestor.
I love talking about her.
Well, good. So I feel like in 2019, we might have some misconceptions about what etiquette is. We think about sort of an Edith Whartonian world that might be a little bit inaccessible to us in the social media, you know, income inequality world that we live in right now. But I'm a big devotee of books on etiquette, books on manners, books on how we live. I would love it if you could give me what the Post Institute's definition of etiquette is.
Happy to. One of the reasons why Emily Post etiquette has survived for almost a century now is because we base our etiquette on consideration, respect, and honesty. And we believe that while the manners might change, all these little interactions that we have with one another that tell us, you know, what to do and what to expect from others, those do change over time and across cultures and even through different like microcultures. But it's really important to recognize that through it all, we're all trying to just treat each other well. And when we take the time to look at the people around us and consider how a given situation that we're in is going to impact them and their lives, and we respect the fact that they are another human being on this planet who deserve to be considered, and we honestly think about how any given outcome that we might be inclined to do might impact these other people, we're generally going to know kind of in that good place in the center of us whether a particular solution is going to be good, is going to best build a relationship, or whether we're really getting something out of it for ourselves, or whether we're the ones taking the hit, right? Because that happens too. Sometimes you say, I know I'm meeting rudeness, and you know what? We're going to do this just because it's going to be easier for everybody and I can get through it. And there are so many choices to be made, but Emily Post etiquette has always come from a place of trying to put people at ease and to really build confidence and trust with them. And we really do that by using these three principles of consideration, respect, and honesty.
I love the idea that in the post world, etiquette is not a hammer that you bludgeon people with for not knowing which one is the fish knife.
Yeah, no, our brand would be dead.
That I love the idea that really it is about empathy, about making a better experience for the people that you're in the room with or that you're having the conversation with.
Emily always said that whenever two people come together and their behavior affects one another, you have etiquette. So that is from holding a door for a complete stranger to tactfully merging two lives together in a wedding ceremony, which anyone who's ever tried to do that, I have not, knows that, like, this is a big deal. There's a lot of etiquette in those delicate moments.
And that is why there are books on the subject.
That's why there's books on the subject.
I believe some that the Post Institute probably have had their hand in.
You got it.
I want to just bring up one of the things that you do in this book, in Higher Etiquette, is I love that you do the storytelling part of it that I always think of as being such a big part of the Emily Post brand and the Post Institute brand. So I want to just bring up some of my favorite characters that showed up in the, because they have great names. So these are some of the characters that showed up in Emily Post's original books. So there were the top lofties. the eminence. These were people. These were my favorite. The rich and vulgarian. The rich and vulgars. The Gildings, and of course the Kindhearts, who were the Kindhearts were the ones that we always came back to.
Oh yes.
And I thought this was a fabulous little factoid about your great grandmother. In 1950, she was named the second most powerful woman in America after Eleanor Roosevelt.
True.
We believe was founding the UN circa that time. So that says a lot right there.
No, it was. She was claimed as one of the most influential women of the 20th century. And that's something I'm very impressed with her for. She really had, Emily Post had a radio show right in the 30s. And if you think about illiteracy at that time, that there were a lot of people who couldn't read. So a column that she wrote wasn't going to be something they could access. But any kind of signal in the air from any kind of metal coming out of any kind of tin can, and you could hear how to behave. You could hear if you were going to go over to someone else's house, if you were supposed to bring anything or not, which, by the way, you were not back in the day. To bring a hostess gift was to suggest that your host needed payment for your dinner. And so it was a really different, I mean, talk about, you know, consumerism totally changing etiquette.
The manners have changed, but the principle's the same,
there
right?
There you go. But it is really interesting when you think about what was going on at that time and how having a radio show that she could be beamed into people through really made a difference to her being accessible to all. And etiquette's one of these funny things. It gets a rap as being real high society, really exclusive, mm-hmm. something that maybe has secrets that, you know, only those who are in the know can figure out, right? And instead, it's really actually something that's supposed to be accessible to all. It's supposed to be something that it doesn't matter what your race, your religion, your political background, your identity of yourself is. You should be able to treat the people around you with consideration, respect, and honesty. And Dan, my cousin Dan and I run the Institute together, and we talk a lot about how we are so lucky to hear from people who say, your book did and then XYZ. But the most often what we hear is, I did not grow up with experiences like even having multiple courses when I went out to dinner with my family, or I never went out to a restaurant with my family. Your advice gave me the confidence that I could be in these environments, and it's not something that's hard to figure out. I'm a player, and I deserve to be here. And that's the kind of stuff that I think really, I mean, that's where etiquette really can change the world, and it can really change how we behave. I know a lot of people really feel right now like we are so divided, but it can bring you down to that basic level.
Etiquette is equalizer.
It is a good equalizer.
Or something as accessibility provider. So, I am going to ask our first cannabis question now. And since I am talking to Lizzie Post, I'm going to keep my pleas and thank yous all very much at the top. So my first question is, Lizzie Post, are you on cannabis right now? And is that an impolite question to ask?
So because we're in an educational setting, I will say that technically an impolite question to ask, but because you asked me ahead of time if you could ask it, very polite.
Yes, I did.
There you go. I am on cannabis right now. I think I smoked about an hour before, or a little bit before we got here. But it is something that I tend to incorporate into my life on a daily basis, and not just CBD, it was THC. Not that there's anything wrong with just CBD for those who appreciate that, but it is what a lot of people dip their toes in and say, oh yeah, I do cannabis. I rub a salve on my ankle. I'm like, yeah, you get real high. But it is important to recognize all, but yes, no, I wouldn't say that I'm stoned right now, but I would say that cannabis is in my system.
Okay. Well, yeah. In full fairness, like, ditto.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So, wait a minute. So, wait, you mean we could have, like, blazed before we came together?
Well, we can, hey, listen, there's always the after party,
right?
We're
going to have to hang out after. Anybody who would like to come and join afterwards.
So, how did the idea for the book come about? That has to be a place we have to start. I mean, it's not an obvious place necessarily for the Post Institute to go. What was that initial inspiration?
That was one of those things that any Post family member who ever went to college and someone found out what our family does, they said, oh, you guys should write a book on weed etiquette. There's so much stuff here, you know? It's like, I mean, cannabis etiquette is something that anybody who's consumed or has friends who consume, it's something that's real and it's already built into our culture. And so it was just a matter of time before we actually got the opportunity. And the opportunity came. It was one of those fun things where we were in kind of a really chaotic moment. We're just launching the 19th edition of Emily Post Etiquette. And my cousin has a 3-month-old baby who has a complete life emergency. Ends up in the Boston Children's Hospital. I'm manning things alone in Burlington for a book launch, which, you know, that's chaotic. And then literally, this email comes across my desk from a woman who is the agent of another author that I know, and she and I are doing a book together, so this woman had my email. She just happened to include me on this email. Like, the luck is just, it's there. She writes, hey, I have an author that would really like to, or a publisher that would really like to write a book on weed etiquette. They're looking for an author. Don't think it's right for either of your brands. Do you know any particularly conscientious pot smokers? And I was like, and she said that, I hope
for
I can tell
the radio
like
audience,
this.
She raised
I'm
her
telling,
hands.
I'm like looking at my publisher. I hope I'm not dramatizing this too much. But they, when they found out the Emily Post Institute would be willing, they were like, oh yeah, we'll listen to that. Let's talk about that for a minute. And so, luckily 10 Speed was gracious enough to wait till I had time to write a book proposal. And I think, the best moment for me was I got that book proposal back from the editor who we had submitted it to, and she said, this is really smart. And I don't mean to toot my own horn in this, but it really, I wanted to do this community justice. This is not a frivolous thing. This is saving lives. This helps people get out and engage with people. There are a very large handful of people that it just keeps in a basement with a lot of really good 1970s music on. But, like, it's also, you know, the black lights and all of it. That community's there, too. But it's also something that people love and they want to engage with. They want to share it with their friends. They want to share the experiences and the joy that they get from it. And I did not want them to feel like we were coming in and saying, tie a bow on your joint before you give it to your hostess. Like, that's really not the community. I mean, you can, but no, that's not what this needs to be. And I was so grateful that 10 Speed really saw that in this project and let us run with a much more cannabis 101 style to the book. Emily Post has always been a handholder. You know, we meet you when you come into a new time in your life. You're getting married, you're graduating, you're having kids, you're going to funerals. It's, you know, there are these life moments, and I really wanted it to feel like that. So I was really grateful that it just felt like everything came together in exactly the right way. And I really, that means a lot to me. That doesn't always happen in the world of publishing. So
I love that this isn't just a book for your life. This is kind of a lifestyle book in some ways, that this is a book that where you say this is for people who are maybe approaching the world of cannabis for the first time, that start at a totally beginner state. They need to have someone explain CBD. They need to have someone explain THC. they need to have someone explain the difference between a topical, an edible, and a combustible. Mm-hmm. And yet also, this is a book that very much honors the legacy of what I think we can call existing cannabis culture,
absolutely,
and existing cannabis mores. You know, puff, puff, pass.
It's real.
Don't bogart the joint.
That's real, too.
Yeah. And also, you say that this is a book for people that might be returning to cannabis.
Yeah. I do think so. And, I mean, audience, let me know. For those of you who really enjoyed it in its heyday in the 60s and 70s, I know there are just tons of people in my life who are about a generation above me who are all really excited to be back with it in their lives. Their kids are grown up. They, you know, are retired, whatever it is. They're re-engaging, and they're really excited about what legalized cannabis looks like, because, man, it's a whole new world of weed. It's like dabs and edibles and every kind of thing you could put on your skin you can imagine.
Every type of glossary that yes. you could possibly need is now needed to explain what this is like.
You're listening to Lizzie Post, great-great-granddaughter of Emily Post and co-president of the Emily Post Institute, whose new book is Higher Etiquette, A Guide to the World of Cannabis, From Dispensaries to Dinner Parties. She's joined in conversation by Tony Bravo on Bina, a series featuring creative voices from the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Bina is also available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org.
It's been an interesting world to navigate, too, being a style reporter that branched out into writing about okay. cannabis a little bit. I think maybe we've had some similar experiences with introducing people either returning to cannabis or just to sort of the new 2018, 2019 world of dispensaries and getting things online. Also explaining the difference between CBD and THC is always fun. There was somebody that I brought to a dispensary that kept going, "Oh, I'm so buzzed on all of this CBD. It's fabulous. It's like, let's put on Surrealistic Pillow." And, "Sweetie, no, that's the, no, but I'm feeling it." "Well, all right, sure." "Absolutely, Jerry Garcia, you just get down with yourself." Where did the research process for this book take you? And I would love to hear about kind of some of the existing parts of cannabis culture that you felt were important to include in the book.
Oh, man. The research for this book, it took me mainly to Colorado and Oregon. I had a very short window that I gave myself to write the book. And so, but I was, you know, I kind of knew the basics going in. It's like, for, I knew the world of joints backwards and forwards. That part of the book was like the easiest to write. I was not a huge bong smoker, so that took some time to like just like talk with people who do. Talking with everyone about their particular method of enjoyment and where the little pet peeves and the hang-ups and the courtesies come into play, that was all really, really fun. But in Colorado, it was a really relaxed vibe. I mean, it was a, like, why do you think you even have to ask to smoke in the backyard? Of course you can smoke. You can smoke pot in your bedroom. Like, don't worry about it. Like, you're fine. That's even a thing. You know, it was that kind of a vibe and attitude. Mm-hmm. Everything was very in the land of sativa and indica and hybrid in terms of talking about experience and effect and that sort of thing. Whereas when I went to Portland, it was like, people know their cannabinoids and terpenes in Portland. Like, it was just straight up, what percentage of caryophyllene would you like? And you're just like, there's a choice. We can find caryophyllene. What does it do? The science was definitely one of the most interesting places that the book took me.
Yeah.
But hearing how the different states kind of settled into their zone with it was also very, very interesting.
I noticed, too, you're very careful here to talk about not only prohibition and post-prohibition, but life in post-prohibition states or places where it is no longer prohibited, because you are not advocating that anybody break any of their local laws to participate in the etiquette of this book.
I know a lot of people break a lot of laws to consume cannabis, and I'm sure I have done my fair share, but it really... we as an institute, we're not going to tell you to walk down the etiquette of walking down the a street with a joint in your hand, because that's just not something that's legalized. It's, you know, once we get to the point where we have lounges and things like that, there'll be an etiquette to that. There'll be smoking clubs eventually, things like that. Mm-hmm. And we can get into that once those spaces come. But for now, it's like you really can't say, oh, this is how to handle it in this national park. You can't, you're not allowed to.
No.
Like, it's not a place we can go yet. So you don't see the etiquette of the burn crews. You don't see the etiquette of, mm-hmm. You hear the joint passed at concerts. That comes up in the book a couple times, but that's much more of like a nostalgically referenced thing than a here's how to deal with it.
So I want to ask a question to the audience now. One of the things we just talked about was this kind of new, very boutique world we're discovering of dispensaries and lounges here in San Francisco and all over California. How many people in the audience have been to a dispensary? Just been?
I like our audience.
All right. How many people here are trying to work up the courage to make that first dispensary visit? Anybody?
Anybody?
I find that the dispensary experiences can be, there's kind of one for everybody. Some can
That's
be a
true.
Little bit more like Neiman Marcus.
Yes.
Barney's is even opening head shops in mm-hmm. some of their stores where it's legal.
Oh, yeah.
I think they're, what are they called? The high end, I think is what they're calling it.
Yeah,
the higher
something
end.
Something like that.
Not too different higher from end. Higher etiquette.
I really want them to carry the book, so write in.
That's an area I'd like to talk to you about, Lizzie. How did people advise you when it comes to finding whatever the right dispensary experience is, or how to know when an experience was right for what their needs were?
The things I've heard so far are that dispensaries, it really does kind of depend on how far legalized your state is. The early days of Colorado, people really actually felt uncomfortable in dispensaries. Dispensaries have so many legal procedures that they have to follow and boxes that they have to check to comply so that they don't get shut down or get thousands of dollars in fees, that it's really intense. And I think that intensity really spread through to the customer experience in those first early days of legalization. Mm-hmm. Because I heard a lot of people describe to me like what sounded like I don't even know, because it's like scenes from movies that I like can barely remember, but like, just dark buildings with like tons of, a chain link on them, and just things where you just felt like you were a prisoner just going into it. It didn't feel comfortable. And it was scary, and people didn't have options, and the bud tenders weren't explaining anything to anybody. And now people have this whole array, from really much more of a bro vibe, dispensary where mm-hmm. it really does kind of have that, black lights and black and purple feel to it, straight up through to stores that you wouldn't even recognize it was a dispensary. You'd think you were walking into a jewelry store, and the next thing you know, everything in the case is just glittering green cannabis.
There's it's some like, that look like Apple stores.
Oh,
where
yeah,
everything's
clean
very sleek
and pristine.
And white Danish wood. And there's like one nug of cannabis right there. Somebody goes into the back in a uniform and brings you out a little box with it all wrapped up and gives you your credit card back.
And it's hard because that's a good description of what happens. Like, you go in, you might get to interact with the weed, you might not get to interact with the weed. It all depends on the store, their policy, and the state that you're in. And that, from an etiquette perspective, that makes trying to give advice about a place people are going to visit really hard. There is such a range. I mean, you get people who will gently walk you through the experience, and you get other armed guards telling you back from the line. It's really hard to tell people what to expect.
So California is a little cozier than the early days of Colorado, thankfully. Yeah. It's so interesting to me that in my lifetime I have seen both gay bars and cannabis dispensaries go from being these closed off, no window, know the password sometimes, know what alley to go down
Speakeasies.
And find it, to plate glass windows and chandeliers and both. So let's say, for our etiquette cannabis role play here, say that I am a newer cannabis consumer in California. What are some of the types of questions that might be helpful for me to ask to a bud tender, which is the person that is going to be giving you your cannabis experience? It's taken from bartender, but with bud.
Absolutely. The first thing that they are probably going to ask you is, what kind of high are you looking for? And that's a really important thing to think about. And one of the sections of higher etiquette talks about cannabis and you, and asks you to think about, why do you want to engage with this plant and what are you looking for out of it? Because that's going to help you ask your bud tender for the right kind of weed.
So we've both, I'm sure, heard all kinds of reasons. I mean, sleep comes up a lot.
Oh, yeah. Sleep, inflammation, anxiety, depression, appetite.
Stress from work, certainly.
Absolutely. That comes up. I want to be more conversive. I want to be a little calmer. I mean, whatever it is.
I have this piece I have to work on, and I want to be all inside
focused,
my head.
Yeah, really focused and creative. And so I would definitely go in and state what you want to feel. If you want to be chatty and lively, they're going to understand what you mean by that, and they're going to recommend a percentage of THC or a balance of CBD THC for you, and then they're going to recommend a terpene that's going to go with it. And so they'll find weed that has the right terpene for what it is you want to do, because terpenes kind of drive the direction of your high. And so they're the things that are going to let us feel more focused and energetic, or relaxed and calm and, you know, easygoing, or sometimes they'll make us pass out.
So then I think what I would probably want to know as a new cannabis user in California is, how do I want to experience it?
Oh yeah.
You know, how do you figure out if you're somebody that wants a combustible? That's the new way we say smoking. Or so we want to dab, or we want to do, which would be concentrate, or am I a vapor? Am I somebody that wants to experiment with edibles?
I think one of the first things, and my friend, we were having dinner with my friend Paul the other night, and he said, I'm just not a smoker. I don't like inhaling things. That's not comfortable for me. So I thought edibles would be right, but they don't seem to do anything. And I think it is important to decide how you like to consume. I've always been that person who likes to inhale things. So it's like, that's something I'm comfortable with. And so flower was always going to be right for me, or vaporization was always going to be right for me. One of the really tricky things is that a lot of people think, oh, I'll just try a little chocolate, or I'll just try a gummy or something like that. And the difference when you inhale cannabis, you're getting THC in a formation that's called the Delta 9 formation. It's a molecule that's really clunky. And when it goes in through your lungs, up to your brain, it's got to get through this thing called the blood-brain barrier. And that barrier has small holes in it. So big, clunky Delta 9 THC doesn't get through very easily. There are some things that help it through, like different terpenes, but it's pretty big and you don't get as high. But when you eat it, it metabolizes in your liver, and that changes it to this teeny tiny little molecule called 11-hydroxy. And those suckers whiz through your blood-brain barrier like there's no tomorrow, and you get really high because you're actually getting a lot more THC from the same product.
That is why whenever I have to give advice, either in my capacity at the Chronicle or in my capacity as someone that goes out into the world about edibles, I always say follow dosing instructions. If they say take half a piece and wait a half hour, take half a piece and wait 45 minutes at least.
Yeah, I would agree.
I've known too many stories of people saying, oh, I don't feel anything from this handful of cannabis popcorn. I'm not feeling anything from this chocolate bar. I'll have six more.
Yeah.
And then 5 days later, we find them.
So this is another really, seriously.
No exaggeration.
It's like, wow, I didn't know you could trip off pot. But no, this brings up another good thing to remind people of, is that it's really hard to gauge how much by just asking a friend. Don't just ask your friends, well, what would you do? Because Tom Marshall, who is like 6 foot, all of them, all the inches, like probably 6'5", and just a gigantic gentleman. He had asked me for some of my edibles, and I was like, okay, sure, yeah, you know, these were homemade things. And he said, how many do you take? And I said, well, I take a full one, and that like really knocks me out before bed, you know. And he's like twice and a half my size, and so he figured, oh, okay, I'll take two. He said, and this is the lyricist for the band Fish, so like we're talking someone who's definitely experienced. He was like, "I never again, Lizzie. I'm never taking anything that you offer me again. Like, I will need to do a quarter. I was out for forever. It was like gone." He's like, "I've never been that high in my life."
So I'd love to do a little bit of like a bullet round.
Do
of
it.
Just some areas.
I don't know if we can keep me short, but sure.
Okay.
No, I'm just too long-winded, but go for it.
No, no, you're not long-winded. You're knowledgeable. So here's just a few areas that I would love whatever kind of the first etiquette associations that pop into your mind are.
Okay.
So how about gifting cannabis?
Always a good idea.
Always a good idea?
Yes, please send it to me.
Okay,
it's like the best gift ever.
Now, what about gifting people cannabis where we might not be sure about their level of familiarity?
Don't do it.
Is it a case-by-case basis
thing? Absolutely. It's an ask-first thing. It's never even a take a guess.
Okay, so what about cannabis in other people's environment? So should we just assume always ask? Or in states with legalization, should we assume... the law's on my side.
Always ask. Always ask. And don't vape in the bathroom just because you think it doesn't smell or that you feel fine with it. Really respect your host's rules. If your host really doesn't want cannabis being consumed on their property, don't do it. You can save it for later. You can take something that doesn't impact.
So this gets into an interesting area because the laws vary on this. How about cannabis in semi-public settings? So let's start with vaping. Is it okay to take a hit off of your vape pen if you're, you know, rushing from the mall to the supermarket on the sidewalk and, you know, just that mall experience, you need a little something to take your edge off before you deal with the with how competitive
stressful,
the Whole Foods
stressful
is.
Stressful shopping. I have to say no, like no, you have to do what's legal in your state. So I have to say, like, that's like not so much an etiquette issue as it is a legal issue.
So what about at something like a music festival where there seems to be a lot of cannabis going on around you, and that can be, you know, something
liberating?
Yeah. But music festivals can be all, you know, can involve all kinds of different age ranges, generations, music taste. You know, there are music festivals for just about everything. If
That's
we see
true.
A whole bunch of people smoking pot at Outside Lands, are we to assume it's okay for us to do it, or should we still be mindful?
So again, you really have to take the legality into account in terms of my advice. But I do think that no matter what, even if we're at a private event where it's a very mixed group of people, that you don't want the smoke to be blowing onto other people. You want to ask your host, you know, is there a spot you would prefer I do this in, or is now even a good time? Those sorts of things. So again, we go really, really fall back on the ask first policy of etiquette, especially in earlier days of legalization.
So this is the rare case where I'm going to say asking for permission is better than asking for forgiveness.
Yes.
Sometimes you want to err on the other side as a journalist, but I'd say permission, definitely the go-to here.
Yeah.
What about as a host? So I feel like we, especially in San Francisco, especially in the Bay Area, are living in a world where we see cannabis, some of us, a little bit more like wine, where having some cannabis in your bar and whatever your entertaining situation is, like we were saying earlier, like having an alcohol you might not drink if it's not your personal cup of tea, but you'd like to offer it to your guests. Like you said, you don't drink tequila, but you have it in your bar.
Right.
Is it becoming kind of a option, a recommendation that hosts have some cannabis in some form on hand in the places where it is legal to offer guests?
Yes. In all those legal situations. Yeah, no, I think it is a great idea. I've been really encouraged by hosts that I've heard of who they themselves aren't partaking anymore, but they really like having stuff available for their guests who come over. I see it starting a lot more in the house guest realm right now, and I'm excited to see it jump over into everyday entertaining. I think it's very cool. If I showed up to a friend's house who didn't like smoke pot, and they had a joint for me. I might worry about what kind it was, but I also might just be really, really excited and just feel so taken care of, because I don't drink very much. In fact, I don't enjoy alcohol. And so for me, it's like, wow, you thought of me and how I might really enjoy and partake in this evening. Thank you.
So again, thinking of others is part of etiquette.
So it's just amazing. All comes back to that consideration and respect.
So let's do another one of our etiquette role plays, okay, if you'll indulge me. So
I love this game.
Let's say that San Francisco, we're very big on role play here. We have a whole bunch of street festivals that are all about it. it's the JCC. We're keeping this appropriate, though. So let's say you were a hostess that was offering me some cannabis and I wanted to partake, but I had some questions. I would like to figure out what the way to ask those questions would be without seemingly questioning the taste of the host or the hostess, or without insulting them by sounding like I'm suspicious of what their cannabis standards might be.
So I might say something like, oh, that looks fabulous. Do you mind telling me what it is, just so I know what I'm in for?
Is it okay to ask a strain name?
Yeah, absolutely. You could say, oh, if you know the effect or the strain name, let me know. You know, please, by all means, let me know. I'd love to know the effect or the strain name, either of that.
So if I were offering it to you now, if you were at my house, I might say, hi, Lizzie, this is a lovely cookie combination. It weighs more in a kind of chatty sativa direction.
Social.
And I would say that there's maybe a little bit of a lemon note or a bit of a citrus quality to it.
Well, my, that just sounds divine. No, that does. That sounds great. Thank you. Do you happen to have anything that might be a little bit on the relaxing side? I tend to be a little more of an indica girl.
Why, yes, I do. I always keep a variety of indica at the disposal of my guests.
Tony, you are such a great host. Thank you. So, do you have a small bowl I might smoke out of?
Absolutely.
Oh, thank you.
We also can roll you one, or we bought some lovely pre-rolls.
This is Bina, KALW series featuring artists and thinkers who've spoken at the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Today's guest is Lizzie Post, great-great-granddaughter of Emily Post and co-president of the Emily Post Institute, whose new book is Higher Etiquette, A Guide to the World of Cannabis, From Dispensaries to Dinner Parties. She's joined in conversation by Tony Bravo. Bina is also available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org.
So that brings us to another question. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it is, if somebody has grown their own strain, especially, or if somebody is offering something that is more of a more personal to them, and you're maybe not necessarily somebody that is interested at that moment or interested in general in your life in cannabis, what's the polite way to sort of indicate that you're to decline, and also to indicate that perhaps it's not an experience you're open to? I feel like people need to know the elegant way of saying no. Nancy Reagan said, just say no, but I think you should at least say no. No, thank you.
No, thank you. It's funny. It kind of gets a little more casual, but it's just, I'm all good. Thanks. Or I'm good. Thank you so much for offering. Mm-hmm. Thank you for offering. I'm all set for now. Or I don't tend to partake. That's another, a lot of people, you know, like to use the word partake for some reason in that moment, but as opposed to I don't consume, I don't partake. But it is funny how much actually choosing your words carefully can make a difference, and delivering it in that tone that says, I'm really grateful that you wanted to include me in this, but I'm going to say no. It is polite. It is okay. It is proper. You should not be X'd out of the party for such a thing.
Absolutely.
You should feel confident doing so. But I do tend to say, thank you so much. If you can, and if you, some people really like the smell, but they don't want to actually consume the cannabis. And so smell it. Say, I'd love to smell it. Oh, tell me how you grew it. Talk to me about it. What would you like to tell me about it? This is someone's pride. This is like someone showing you their art collection or their garden or their, I mean, it is, believe it or not. It's when I will tell you that if you had come to my home in August of last year, I would have spent at least 20 minutes hopefully thinking that you were excited to see my plants. Like, I really would have tried. They become your babies. They are things you are really, really proud of if you're really into your growing. And so you as a guest want to pay attention. How is my host offering this to me? Is it something where they've been telling me about it for weeks, excited to show me their plants? I'm headed back to LA after this trip, and there's the boyfriend was like, "Oh, well, is she gonna come and see the plants? I know I'll be away, but is she gonna see the plants?" You know, it's that kind of an excitement. If you have that kind of person on your hand, ask them questions. You know, you can say, "Oh, it's not my thing, but I'd love to hear about why you love it so much." You know, it's the same information we give in our business etiquette seminars. If someone has a hobby, ask them questions about it. It's the easiest, it's like the easiest low hanging fruit conversation you could ask for.
Oh, absolutely. I feel like, you know, one of the things that people occasionally ask my advice on as a reporter who talks to people and asks questions all day is how do you deal with, you know, dinner party situations or things where you're plopped next to somebody you may not know. And I feel like curiosity is always the answer. So even if cannabis isn't your experience, what are some good kind of basic questions that we could throw out that people could ask?
If it's about someone's homegrown, asking what they chose to grow, because that'll get them talking about the cultivar itself and the methods that they used. And also asking why they chose to grow this. Those are probably the two easy. What did you choose to grow and why did you choose those plants? And that's let me tell you, that'll get some growers going for a long time, especially if they just smoked.
The thing that I have learned, if you really want to go down a rabbit hole, is you ask where they get their guano from for fertilizer.
Oh, totally.
Oh, people love to talk about guano, apparently, about the bat community.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. No, all kinds of organic fertilizers and natural elements used to grow, and everyone
wants
to talk about it.
Light deprivation growing.
Yes.
Oh,
and
wow.
Your light
can really get people talking about that.
And the types of lights that you use, LEDs. It's really interesting when people start debating this out.
And greenhouse versus sun grown, I think, is also an area.
Indoor versus outdoor. Yeah. Hydroponic versus soil. There's all kinds of good things to go to.
So looking around this room, I see such diversity here that it leads into our next question. I mean, there's all kinds here. Who is it that's using cannabis now? Is it, there was this image that it was one type of person or two, Cheech and Chong.
Yeah. And some Coley.
And of course, and Sean Penn, all of these people who have Bay Area connections, by the way.
That's true.
Who is it now? I mean, in my experience, it isn't one type of person.
I would have to agree.
Who's the most surprising person that you talked to for this book? Somebody that you thought that you were surprised to find out was involved in the cannabis world or was as knowledgeable as they were?
There weren't any surprise. Only because through the research I was really going after, I didn't meet anyone who I was surprised consumed cannabis or liked it. But I did meet a lot of people who changed their perspectives about cannabis. People who had sworn it off and now it's the thing helping their cancer treatment. Or our cabbie on the way from LAX who totally was against it. And then by the end of the cart, we had him convinced to go get the book, check out cannabis. Like he was fully on board when he like heard someone talk about why they enjoy it and what it does for them.
Oh, I love it. I had a Lyft driver that was really anti.
Really?
Not on the way here, but last week. And I said, listen, what would you rather deal with? Somebody drunk in the back of your car or somebody that's a little stoned?
Yeah.
And that won him over.
Yeah. So it's more surprising the people who kind of changed their minds about it, who I wasn't expecting. And a little surprising. I mean, we have gotten some feedback from people who I've got to say, you know, I get really frustrated when people call this a book just for millennials. Because that's my reaction, because the most amount of people I get the most positive feedback from are from those, I would say 55 or older. And like even down to 82-year-old woman who wrote in when we sent our newsletter announcement out, and she said, I've got to tell you, I voted against cannabis legalization in Massachusetts. And then I met this young woman who is opening up a shop, and she was so put together. And I want my community to be filled with people like her. So I'm advocating to the city council that she, and by the way, I used to carry your Emily Post stationery line. And I mean, just
wow.
Like, I was like, you did just, and it was like, you know, the email's like this long, and you're just like going, oh my goodness. She was so thrilled. So that, those were the biggest surprises.
And good etiquette does make the world smaller. It makes everybody feel closer. So in terms of cannabis in special occasion situations, I noticed that there is a section of the book that deals with cannabis at weddings.
Yes, is that I do be do. I loved it.
Your great grandmother would be so proud of that pun.
I think it's an Emily Post worthy pun.
Is that becoming more common?
Absolutely. I mean, it was definitely common just in any group of friends who enjoy cannabis. It would show up at your wedding. But actual full-on bud bars, it's the gift that goes home with people. A lot of times what people will do is when they're hosting in a legalized state and they have those options, they prep guests who are from illegal states on some of the local state laws. They prep them on things like, you know, here is the dispensary you can go to. Sometimes dispensaries will do discounts for couples. Like, it's really its own niche little space. And there's an entire wedding expo for cannabis. The guy that actually owns and runs the expo also has a cannabis dining experience company, and he's the one that walked me through how he sets the table for a cannabis pairing dinner. And so that was the setting we used, and let me tell you, Emily Post approved. Oh my gosh. It was so smart.
I love it. And we have all of the table setting maps.
Oh, the originals,
In this 30s copy of the Emily Post etiquette book.
They don't have pipes to the left of the napkin, but, you know, the book does explain it.
Okay, so we're going to get really cannabis etiquette niche here.
Okay, we're going
to geek out.
Does
the pipe go to the left?
It does,
like the fork
absolutely.
Does?
Absolutely. I mean, if we operate at the table from a mostly, you know, right-handed perspective, so the pipe would be in the left hand because you want to be able to hold your lighter in your right and pack the bowl. So it's just whichever, it depends on how you do it, but this is how we've kind of leaned in. we put a little dish of flour up above to the left as well, because otherwise they're competing with your glasses on the right-hand side, and we've got the lighter over on the right-hand side of the setting. But that's kind of the basics.
I'm just in heaven with all of this etiquette
here. You asked about, are hosts going to have things on hand? Like, should you be doing this? I was at a dispensary picking out, you know, one hitters as if I was picking out a new set of china. It was like, oh, well, we could do the orange swirls because we have the tablecloth that matches in that color. And if we have a set of six, we can use these in alternate colors. But if we have a set of four, we could do this. And it was so much fun.
But do not compete with the Limoges Chargers. We know the rule. The Limoges takes center stage. I think it's time for some questions from the audience.
Oh, yay.
Hi. How would you approach conversations about cannabis in an office setting? Because oftentimes people will talk about happy hours the night before from drinking, but it's never around cannabis usage.
I might say something like, when people are about talking about happy hour, I mean, this is me, right? Like, I tend to tiptoe in a little bit and then tiptoe in a little further and then a little further. So I would test the waters by saying something like, you know, everyone talks about going for happy hours, but does anyone ever talk about going for like a happy joint, like instead at the end of the day? Or does anybody go for like a happy bowl? And, you know, you can just bring it up more conversationally and see if you get any bites, right? I think that it is a much more delicate subject still, especially around the office. And so you want to make sure you feel confident before bringing it up. And you want to make sure that however you ask doesn't feel like it puts pressure on other people to out themselves. So it's why I like those moments where you can ask it as a general topic or idea, so that people don't have to say, oh, I do that. But they could say, oh, I bet 5 years from now that's going to be a thing. Or, oh, no, you know, you can start kind of getting the conversation going and feel it out without having to be super direct about it. If I was in a work environment that I felt confident in, I would say, be proud and be casual. Like, I would say, you know, let people know, hey, oh, I'm going to go smoke a joint after work. You're welcome to join me. You know, I wouldn't feel bad stating that I do it, that it's something I'm headed out to do. But I might not say that in front of large groups of people, or I might not like come in wearing, you know, my giant Joints for Life t-shirt. Like, you know, you're going to kind of keep it level, but it is funny. You have to, each company, you really do have to decide for yourself whether you feel comfortable with it or not. You might keep that completely private.
Read the room, you know what your workplace's expectations are around, cannabis, around even the notion that there might be some use adjacent or before office time. Know the culture of your workplace.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hello.
Get the sense that you are someone who has received and perhaps also given some really fun and special cannabis gifts. And I wonder if you have advice about cannabis gifting, or if you might want to share any of the fun ones that you've given or received.
Hey, that's a really good question. I'm like, is there a story you're remembering that I'm forgetting? It's my editor on the book, Caitlin Ketchum. My favorites are, I love gifting joints. I really, really do. I roll joints with filters, sometimes called tips or crutches. And I like writing little messages on them, like happy birthday or just something, so that when you roll it up, it's like it's burning with that spirit. Yeah, I get a little woo-woo. Like it's really fun.
It's all about the handwritten notes still
it
as
is.
A way of acknowledging someone's hospitality or friendship to you.
Honestly, gifts of homegrown are some of my favorites, because I do think it's a labor of love, and it's really lovely to try something so natural and so unprocessed. Because the cannabis that we get at dispensaries really does go through a lot of stuff to get to where it is. It's often quite a bit older. So when you get that fresh homegrown, it's really a different flavor experience. But there's been all kinds of cool things that you can think of, from like little jar or joint sets. I like doing taster menus. So I've got like about five strains of cannabis that I keep on hand at home. And I really like sometimes I'll mix them with CBD. And so you'll do like little half and halves, or and you can like pair them with different like suggestions for when to smoke or something like that. That kind of stuff. I like having fun with that kind of stuff.
Having covered the lifestyle side of cannabis now for about 2 years, I have to say we get pitched a lot of cannabis gift opportunities around the holiday season. Well, the one that stuck out the most to me was a gift for Hanukkah. It was, I don't know that I want to say the company, just because I don't want to be seen as promoting somebody as a journalist, but it was eight different strains.
So cool.
For, you know, the eight nights of Hanukkah. And hopefully they burned just as long as they needed to go.
I was going to go. And like, were they broken up into eighths as well?
I would like to think that they were that,
like, right?
Symmetrical.
So yeah. The whole season is an ounce. Yeah. I like that.
Lizzie, I want to close the evening by asking one final question.
Okay.
Is there a golden rule that we should be approaching cannabis with? Is there one piece of advice that you want people to carry with them when they leave here tonight?
I would say no judgment. That this really, you don't always understand someone else's perspective, and just really know that. Knowing that, walking around knowing that, gosh, it makes a really big difference, because even, you know, it's even among people who do consume regularly, trying to act like you know they're high, or that you know why they consume or anything, it's just, it's not worth it. I say listen to people, and the more you listen, I think the more curious you get. We used that word earlier. Curiosity is really, really important in this space. But no judgment. Don't, you know, whether it's, oh, I can't believe you use those vape pens, or it's, oh my gosh. I mean, there's people always say to me, there's no etiquette with cannabis. And I'm like, that feels like judgment. Like, thanks. But whatever it is, just think about the words that are coming out of your mouth, and how would you feel if they were coming back at you?
So you are not only the Emily Post of cannabis, you're kind of the Atticus Finch of also. You never really know what it's like until you're in someone else's shoes.
There you go.
So you see things from their point of view.
Exactly.
What a wonderful sentiment to end this evening on. Lizzie, thank you so much for this wonderful conversation.
Thank you so much. This has been a lot of fun.
And thank you so much to the JCC for having us.
Bina is a co-production of the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco and KALW. For more information about programs at the JCCSF, you can visit jccsf.org. Today's guest was Lizzie Post, great-great-granddaughter of Emily Post and co-president of the Emily Post Institute, whose new book is Higher Etiquette, A Guide to the World of Cannabis, From Dispensaries to Dinner Parties. She was joined in conversation by Tony Bravo, style reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. The recording engineers of the JCCSF are Ben Bernardi, Alex Espelay, Dan Folds, Carly Mari, and Aiden Nelson. David Kwan edits and produces the program, and Tina Pamintuan is the executive producer. Our theme music is from the album Masada Rock by the Rasha Neem Trio, and the music you're hearing right now is by John Zorn. Bina is available as a podcast, and you can find it at kalw.org. I'm Jordan Abel. Thanks for listening.